Well, hopefully you're going to listen to our next guest, Zorba. We have him on every Sunday, and there's always something going on in the world of rugby league. Morning, Zorb.
Morning, Jimmy. Morning, Ray.
Morning, Pete.
Hey, mate, I made the point, and I was watching that game on Friday night thinking to myself, this is an iconic sporting jersey, and perhaps we don't, I don't know whether revere is the right word, but they are a hugely successful team, the Kangaroos, and maybe they don't get the plaudits they deserve. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've been great for so long. It really does hit the headlines when they get beaten. And in a weekend when our, week after our rugby side dipped out of the World Cup so poor, you know, so meekly, it just makes you doubly proud of them. But I think we're going to be doubly proud of our women's team too. I think it's amazing what they've done in a short period of time. They've really shown rugby how to promote women's football, to get serious about it. All that momentum, that wonderful momentum from the Olympic Games gold medal,
yes,
has gone in rugby. Mm. And the real athletes now in women's sport, in football, are playing rugby league. I mean, the skill of Brigginshaw, the kicking of her and Kira Dibb, the power of Millie Boyle, who is a rugby union convert, the centres, Sturgis and Kelly, imagine them in rugby. I mean, they're just stars, those two girls. It was a great game. The Kiwis are a tough side, down 18-4 at halftime. They'll beat 28-8. But I want to give the coach, Brad Donald, who we don't know a lot about, I want to congratulate him. To have the courage, to have the side try to do things so differently, kicking on the first tackle from a scrum for tries. Something that we don't see in the men's game anymore because we've been so regimented in how we play the game.
Yeah.
But here's the women's team with a young coach that obviously has them eating out of his hand, doing what he is suggesting they do, and he's so innovative. Congratulations to them. And I think it showed great courage and great skill. I've always believed that our coaches in rugby league have so much of a part to play. Mm. And I think the first NFL coach that gets a rugby league coach to work there for a couple of years to show them what they can do with forward passes and runarounds and inside passes and flicks, that NFL team will go to heights that you've never seen before. It's going to happen. The penny's going to drop somewhere.
Well, that's an interesting thought, isn't it?
I'll tell you what. Has anyone ever done the mathematics on short kickoffs? Like, that's a little part of the game, right?
But exactly.
You know, what I have to look at that and think, surely there's benefit in rather than 100% turning over the ball from a kickoff.
Yep.
I don't know whether it's 50%, whether it's 40%, whether it's 30%, getting the ball back from a short kickoff.
Can I ask you?
Yeah, that's the one thing they do well in rugby, and they do it with drop kicks as well.
Yeah.
We can't drop kick to save our lives. Mm.
Do the NRL teams practice that enough? Defending a short kickoff? Because often games...
Yeah, they do, but we don't try it enough. As Jimmy said, we're too regimented. We don't try things until we're desperate.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, well, Zorb, can I ask you a question? I asked Jimmy earlier. Great Britain are down in this part of the world. Australia will play Tonga next week in an international. Great Britain will play New Zealand. Why isn't Australia playing Great Britain?
Well, after last night, Ray...
I know what you're saying. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
but they're here.
Look, it's the first Great Britain touring side for a long time.
Exactly.
2006.
This is Great Britain.
Yeah.
They haven't toured for a long time, and I think they're probably afraid of what might happen because of what was happening prior to them ceasing to come here. Tonga, Great Britain, I learned something last night, and I don't like to knock great players, but Josh Hodgson is regarded as the best hooker in the game next to Cameron Smith.
Yes.
He's a greedy player. I watched him last night. I would hate to play halfback to him. He plays his game, and when it's a dead end, he shovels it. But you don't know what he's going to do. I mean, a dummy half has got to get his back line moving. He doesn't do that. He jumps out from dummy half. He kicks from dummy half. He takes over the game. And it's okay at Canberra because he doesn't have a dominant halfback. I thought he killed the debut of Jackson Hastings last night. Hastings got the ball when Hodgson decided he couldn't do anything with it. It didn't look good.
Yeah, there's a fine line between...
I don't like seeing selfish players.
There's a fine line between overplaying your hand, isn't it? Mm. That's the danger that Josh Hodgson runs into. What about Jake and Tom? Have you signed them up yet? Gee, there's a lot of interest in these two players, or?
Well, there's a lot of kite flying going on by journalists that really aren't doing their homework. The facts are on Jake and Tom, and we read again this week where they're supposedly going to the Bulldogs. The Bulldogs are going to sign anyone. The fact is, not many players want to go there, and I don't blame them. They're a rabble at the moment off the field. But kite-flying journalists are in their element as the November 1 deadline approaches.
Yes. Player
managers use these journalists to up the ante on their players in a greedy grab for more money. Now, Latrell Mitchell, David Fifita, Tom and Jake are the headline players at the moment because their contracts... November 1st, they can go on the open market. And as I said, the Bulldogs are the club getting touted for most. Now, Tom and Jake will sign close to the November 1 deadline. Des Hassel will get around it this week. Desi's not moving too well at the moment. He's got until November the 4th to throw away his newfound friend, his walking stick.
He's what?
His walking stick.
What, has he had a knee injury or something? What's he got a walking stick?
He's had a hip operation. For a quiet one.
Right.
Now, his players, if they see Des with a walking stick, they will A, saw it in half,
yes.
B, paint it pink, or three, just steal it. He's working hard to get to November the 4th, which is only a few days away. To get rid of his walking stick. What he's going to do with the Trbojevic's, in his own words, are that he will treat them with the respect that they deserve. The offer will be in keeping with what they're worth on the open market and what's been offered by other clubs. He will deal with them because he now considers them absolute adults and really don't need to have his parents or... Well, his manager's got to be involved, but his manager works for SFX. And the boss of SFX is George Mimas, who is joined at the hip with Des Hasler. Now, George is boss of that international company in Australia. Des Hasler has done all of his contracts, and he's a tough man to deal with George Mimas. So George Mimas and Des will sort this out with the boys, not with his parents this time, with their parents this time. They've already shunned the Bulldogs. I don't know how many times they want to say they don't want to go there. There is a feeling at Manly that they might go to the NRL and say that the players have been approached by a third party representing the Bulldogs up to 6 months ago. They rejected that meeting. They said they didn't want to go, they don't want to leave the club, and they don't particularly want to go to the Bulldogs. I don't know how many times the Bulldogs have got to be told that they won't be getting Tom and Jake, but we might as well do it on air one more time. I don't like kite flying journalists. Send them up, you get one right out of about 10, and then you poke your chest out.
Geez, you've opened up a Pandora's box there. If anyone who had made an approach before they're allowed to is made public.
Well, they could easily make it public.
By the way, no conflict of interest for George Mimas, given the fact he manages the coach and the players?
Well, how many times the coaches, manage coaches and players that they're dealing with?
And
happens every week.
True.
Yes.
And then the other point is, greedy managers, well, isn't their job to get them as much money as they can?
Well, it is their job to do that, but it's not their job to do something that the players don't want them to do. And if the players have already rejected flatly to even have a meeting or to go and talk to anybody, and they said, no, we're not interested, for them to keep trying, I think, is... I suppose they've got to do that when you're down as far as they are on the ladder.
Oh, jeez. They finished very strongly, the Dogs, but anyway...
Almost made the finals. Now, listen,
on Jake and Tom, will Manly need to shed players if they are to retain them at...
That's a good question.
They've got
the money for them now.
So they can keep DCE as well?
Yep.
Okay, all three. So it'd be the Melbourne Storm system.
Yeah, pay the top players.
Pay the top players, right. What about Marty Tapau and Adam Fanua Blake and Dylan Walker? What do they get paid?
They're all signed.
Right, okay. So they must be getting nothing.
Well, if you want to live in God's country, you pay.
Oh, come on.
Silv's got to answer for everything this morning.
Just getting back to that test match on Friday night in Wollongong. Congratulations to the people of Wollongong.
Yes.
And, to
good
the
crowd,
wasn't it? Yeah. I thought that, and I've given Mal Meninga a couple of touch-ups of late, but I want to give him a big tick on this one. I think taking the side to Kiama, mixing with the people like they did in Kiama, it's a beautiful town by the beach in a lovely setting. The players loved it. The kids in the area had access to Australia's greatest football team. And 18,000 turned up in Wollongong. I thought that was a salute to the team being visible. And one thing Meninga does well, he gets his team out into the community. That was a just reward, and it was terrific. And I don't think we were all that good. I think just 10 minutes of brilliant play by Damien Cook, or 6 minutes of brilliant play, where he scored a try and set one up, gave Australia a big lead. And the best thing about the Kiwis was an outstanding Harker. The facial expressions were something terrifying. Sean Johnson, again, disappointed.
Yes.
I thought Cordner was great, a great leader for Australia. Origin, country, and club premiership in 1 year. First New South Welshman to do that. I think it was good that Rabbits Warren was again calling the test match. Maybe one more year for Rabbits. Was signified by his appearance there. It was great to hear his dulcet tones again. Benji Marshall, 20 caps as captain of New Zealand.
Yes.
I don't think he played all that well, but they've still got a little bit of work to do. I love the Tonga, Great Britain passion in that game, and Australia will have its work cut out. Overcoming the power of Tonga, at least in the first half of their game next weekend. I look forward to that. And congratulations to Christian Wolfe. I thought he's a coach on the rise. He's going to be coaching at St Helens next year, and his job with Tonga has been a very good one. And congratulations also to the skipper of the Tongans. I thought Taki Ayo, on and off the field, was just exemplary.
Yes.
And that young man is a heck of a footballer, and he's a heck of a human being too. Watching him at the pre- and post-match interviews to talk about the passion of wearing his island country's jersey every time he pulls it on, I thought was just great.
Yes, yes.
And I thought that young Tessie Niu, 18 years of age, debuting for Tonga, it's a beautiful story. They tried him in the nines, and the senior players were that impressed with him. They went to the coach and said, look, we'll throw in money to bring him to New Zealand with us. We want him in the side somewhere at the first opportunity. And when they got that opportunity, they put him straight in. And what a young player he is.
Yeah, fantastic. Good on you, Zorb. We'll speak next Sunday.
Look forward to it.